Greetings, Eugene.
Greetings, my brother. How are you?
Oh, we're doing good here, man.
Yeah, it's hot down here, man, but I love it.
So, where are you, man?
I'm in Fort Lauderdale.
Ah.
Hey, this is, they call me a snowbird. This is my second month in this area. But it's a little bit more than snow. It's called foraging for economics.
I hear you. Now, hold tight. I got to make sure this thing is on the air now. Hold on.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, now we set now. We set now. Okay. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Eugene Gray and guitarist extraordinaire is on the Ross Charles Show, and he wants to share some of musical history, his history. Brother from Green Island in Jamaica. Go there, Eugene.
Right. Yes. Green Island, ALS countryman, eh?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, born in Green Island, you know, at, My father used to work for the government then. We were transferred into the Eastern Hanover area. We lived in diaspora while I went to Rossi's, and that's where I started music in the Rossi school band.
Uh-huh.
You know, and my first instrument was a harmonica. What happened? In 64, they started this pop and mentor competition. That was the time when Eddie Siaga, he was not as powerful as he was now in politics, but he was the person designated to the development of the arts. So as a kid, 13 plus, I was playing harmonica on the first major festival in Jamaica, and apparently our band won the first prize too.
That was 1964?
64, yes.
Whoa, man, so 13 years old. So who were some of the competitors that you had, and was there anybody that made it?
Yes, as a matter of fact, one of Jamaica's major superstars, Slim Smith.
Ah.
Slim Smith was a bass player with the band that competed with us.
Wow.
They call themselves the Victors, and they're out of West Kingston, you know,
uh-huh.
Tuolumne constituents. And to be honest, the competition was hot. These guys sounded good.
Whoa. Really
good. And we won a second year, the following year, but there was some kind of a snafu because the band in Kingston who got the prize had our name. So they are the ones who went up to collect the trophy and the money and stuff, and a whole bunch of confusion. But, you know, that's past history.
Well, hold on, hold tight, Eugene. I got to do a station ID. Just stay right there. Ladies and gentlemen, you're tuned in to the Ross Charles Show, and this is WHRW Binghamton. And it is 3 o'clock, and we are listening to one of the better guitarist in the field of reggae and other musics, because Eugene has played with he's a musician. He's played with Kid Creole and the Coconuts. You run it, Eugene. Go ahead.
Oh gosh, why? if I start, it will keep me until next year.
I know.
I played with everybody. I led Denroy Morgan's group for about 3 years, and still do sessions with him on and off. When Crow Nights Affair were happening,
uh-huh.
I used to do sessions with them. You know. The Kid Creole thing with me, I started recording with him in the band just, you know, coming into being somewhere around the late 70s, early 80s.
Uh-huh.
But through the years, they were kind of having problems with the guitar players that they would use from America to interpret the lines that I play, because in my experience is a little bit different. What they wanted was a person who could interpret the Caribbean thing, because he wanted a Caribbean flavor to his music.
Right, right.
But he wanted a person who could interpret the Caribbean and the American.
Ah.
Most Caribbean guitar players could not do both. And most American guitar players could not do both. So on tour, they said they would have a sound, but they have problems trying to replicate the record. So in about 1986, they asked me if I would go on the road with them. So I did that from about 86 to the beginning of 92. And, you know, after that, as a matter of fact, while I was playing with them, I was in school at the same time studying, trying to fine-tune the craft. So after graduation, I wanted to pursue another avenue of the business. So that's when I left Kid Creole and trying to put my own group together and so forth.
So when did you first come stateside?
Stateside, oh, okay. I went through a whole bunch of different changes in Jamaica, right? Playing trombone by the time I was 14. Leaving trombone, guitar was the last instrument I took up that came out of accessibility, because my parents didn't want me to deal with music, period.
Uh-huh.
So I made my first guitar, taught myself to play on it, and started rising through the ranks, and play with few people like Fabulous Five back home, a resident musician in many clubs and hotels throughout the North Coast here in Montego Bay area.
Uh-huh.
And then I move on with Fab Five to Kingston. That's how I went to Kingston, leaving Fab Five within a year, and hooking up with Jackie Jackson and them guys, the Sheraton,
right,
Caribs. That was a real nice band. Real
Well, they're famous musicians, man. I see the names all the time. Jackie, bass player, Jackie Jackson.
Yeah, man. Yeah. There's a legendary Jamaican bass player.
Hawks Brown?
Hawks Brown. That's my very good friend.
Uh-huh.
You know, Hawks Brown, Ronnie Bob, Winston Wright, who, you know, God bless his soul, just passed on, was to work with Toots.
Right.
We guys are like brother friends, you know. And I started my band while I was at the Sheraton. We call ourselves then JSI, really means Jamaica Subway International.
Uh-huh.
We had plans of really leaving Jamaica with this band, you know, following in the footsteps of the Vagabonds, you know, that great Jamaican band that went to Europe.
Yeah, right, right.
So we wanted to carry on that tradition through the 70s. So that's why we came up with that name.
Now, Laurel Akins, that he was one of the ones that went to England, right?
Right, I met him there.
Ah.
Very nice man. Very pleasant musician. And his brother, Bobby Akin. I think I met Bobby, too.
Now, you know what I want to ask you, Eugene? Because I asked two people, and I got some different answers. And I want to ask you, is went from ska to rock steady to reggae, what is the differences, and what changes do the instruments make in those changes?
Okay. First thing, you talk about tempo.
Okay.
Right. The ska is closer to its embryonic you know, what we call the early R&B. That is really the embryo.
Okay.
That became ska. The music of the Blue Band.
More like jitterbug style. Like.
Jitterbug, exactly. Music out of New Orleans and you know, through the 1952 to 55. Ska took on R&B progressions, the chord progressions, R&B jazz licks. Right.
Right.
By the time it came down to rocksteady, thing was slowing down a little bit in terms of tempo.
Ah, now what did the bass have to do with that?
Yes, the bass plays a very important part because it's like there is always two melodies happening within the song.
Okay.
The melody that is being featured on the melody instrument, and the bass has an independent line to play, which is a melody within itself.
Okay.
Even though it's melodic, it's very rhythmic, and it works very well with the bass drum. It has to work with the bass drum.
I see.
And also, what came into being by then was the incorporation of the mento feel. That's where the keyboard comes in, especially the organ.
So that bubbling, that
yes.
Okay.
Because if you play it on a guitar, you'll hear that da-na-na, da-na-na, da-na-na.
Yeah.
The thing with the organ, it is distributed between both hands. So one hand is carrying the offbeat, which is the left hand.
It's almost like the organ is almost like a percussion instrument.
It becomes percussion. Ah. All the standard instruments from the rhythm section become percussion instruments.
Ah.
But basically, as an African feel, you know, that's what we think very percussive.
Uh huh.
You know, the only thing we have tonalities moving along with it.
Right.
You know, so from the rock study, things even get a little slower.
Reggae. I know.
and authentically, they say what the first reggae was, at least for the guitar, was, you know, what they call the cheke in the rhythm section.
Uh-huh.
But the guitar plays a chick, chick.
Right.
Now, I think that came about accidentally.
Really?
Yes. There's a guy who was the famous sessions guitar player back home, a guy named Eric Frater.
I remember seeing it. I got some singles by him, man.
All right. Eric Frater, now, he was in the same high school band with me that we won the competition with.
Uh-huh.
His father was the principal of the high school.
Wow.
And against his father's wish, he went into music also. Right? But Eric was a very innovative guitar player, very young, doing some good things. And when he went to Kingston, started to do sessions for Mr. Dad. And Mr. Dad was the person then who would come to, you know, the foreign countries, pick up the new music that he could, you know, get and bring it back to the islands. He was a very innovative and insightful record salesman.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got involved with the business itself of trying to make music. And he is very instrumental in, along with people like Ernie Ranglin, Roland Alfonso, Tommy McCook, Lester Sterling, the great Lester, these guys try to help Jamaica to create its own beat,
and they all could read music, so
oh gosh, these guys are phenomenal players. They are jazz musicians, really.
Right.
And people today don't realize that the reggae that we have inherited really came from jazz musicians, but at the time when these guys were playing, the music was not internationally known yet. You know, it was in its evolutionary stages.
Right.
By the time it came to Ken Booth, Bob Marley, then a little bit of international recognition came. But Mr. Dad helped to played this beat, and back to Eric Frater, Mr. Dad brought an echo unit, you know, the old spring echo.
Uh-huh.
And patch the guitar through the echo.
Yeah.
And when they hit the guitar, once you hear the rebounds of it, check, and you can change the speed. You can vary the speed. So they managed to control the speed that it could flow in the tempo of the music, and that's how the first check really came. And
so it was really just messing around, and boom, hit this. You know what? That's what Derek Morgan said.
Exactly.
He said that's how Coxon got the reggae, just messing around in the studio.
Exactly. We experiment, man. You know, and until we learn to do it without the echo.
Actually, it wasn't Derek Morgan. Bobby Akins is the one that said that.
Yeah.
You see, because I think Bobby Akins, now this is my opinion, that Bobby Akins is more of a musician than Derek. Derek is a singer.
Derek is just a singer.
Yeah, okay.
Bobby Akins had one of the phenomenal bands back home. The early days, like I would say 60s through early 70s.
So Roland was in that group too. Was it Carabeats? Was it the Carabeats or the Afrobeats? I forget now, because I know
I am not sure myself.
Roland was in that group.
Right.
And then there was Lynn Tate and the Jets.
Lynn Tate is a phenomenal musician. He's a Trinidadian, really, you know.
Ah, that's what Derek said. But you know what Bobby Akins said? Bobby Akins said that Lynn Tate and the Jets used to chart their music.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
And Lynn Tate is a phenomenal pan player.
Well, you see, Eugene, this is one of the things that I'm talking about. You are one of the musicians that have done some of the things that some of these older musicians, like say, for instance, even Jackie Mattoo, that never get credit, and they're always behind the scenes doing all of these works, man, and they never get the credit.
Yeah, that's one of the big disadvantages about Jamaica and the arts. It's like a tradition where the true artists, the real brilliant people among us, are never given the accolades. They always have to leave Jamaica to get that type of a respect. You know, it is sad, but I also would put, you can't point the finger directly, but you have to point somewhere. And also the people who promote music in Jamaica are not focusing on quality. They're focusing on quick money. And that's why we even have what we have today. You imagine, I'm not putting down his brother, you know, he have his place and he has his talent and so forth, and the arts will change. Change is the only thing that is constant in the universe. I'm not knocking him.
Right.
Could you imagine 20 years ago you have a Shabba Ranks competing with Bob Marley?
No way.
No, it wouldn't happen, you know.
Uh-uh.
I'm not saying what he's doing is so bad. It is a nice form. But the content of the form sometimes is what I have problem with.
Well, that's what Bob Andy talks about too, man.
Yes. You have to realize when you become an artist, you're a public servant, whether you like it or not. You have that power to direct thoughts, to shape minds. We as entertainers have a very powerful force among us. We have an art that cannot be touched, cannot be tasted. You cannot smell it. Right?
Seriously.
But it is there, and it is real. Yes. And the politicians know it, and the ministers know it, and we should know it and recognize what we have and treat it with respect. Number one, when a musician improvises, that isn't planned. That is something spontaneous. If it is so spontaneous, how can we do that? Hey, it's got to be a force bigger than ourselves helping us to do that.
Yes, indeed.
So if you recognize this force, you realize that, hey, there's a God, or whatever you choose to call him. And if he is here, you don't own the thing that you're doing. You didn't invent it, you don't own it.
Seriously.
But you are using it, and other people can use it. There's a force that's moving among us. And if the force is moving among musicians, it's moving among our ordinary people too. So let's use the force for the positive parts of it and teach the people and help to enlighten the people and to show them that, hey, the fact that you haven't been to Alaska to see that Alaska exists, it does exist whether you see it or not. Is the same thing with music. You can't see it, but it is there. So let's realize that there's something bigger than ourselves, and let's treat the music with respect, treat people with respect, use the music to lift up people, because I don't think God would give us all these gifts to really denigrate people, denigrate women, put other people down, put other races down, you know, and talk about perversion.
Yeah, and put self down.
And put self down, yeah, exactly. But the funny thing is, you know, what a great writer said, what you speak about is not really what you're talking about. You're talking about yourself, because you can only give a reflection of what's coming from your own mind.
Serious thing, man.
You know? So that's my argument with music. That's why sometimes I'm not so keen on being on the forefront, unless I will be accepted for who I am, and that not trying to be pigeonholed into one little corner because this is how some people make money. I am not against making money. Everybody wants to make money.
Right.
But I must make my money cleanly, honestly.
Principle, man.
Exactly. That's my point. And we, with this great legacy that we call reggae, we have a lot to do in terms of the people who are thinking about keeping the music in the forefront, marketing it. The people who are marketing reggae have to develop new insight. There are a bunch of great, I mean, second to nobody, Jamaican musicians, and even other musicians from other Caribbean islands,
right,
who are all over the place, not working, dying to get a gig. I've just left up north to come to Florida to work.
You getting to work now down there, though, huh?
I'm working. Sometimes I wish to get to my bed, you know?
Well, I feel the same way about the music up here now. You know, you weren't getting the work, and you were close to New York City, but I'm way away from New York City, and it's like few and far in between, you know, when you can get the music. It's like medicine, Eugene.
Yep.
It's like I have to go and find a way to get there to see it, you know. I've been going to see Culture and, you know, groups like that, man. It's,
yep,
it's just upliftment, man.
Of course. And the music's supposed to do that for you. You know, I believe when I go on a gig, there is always someone in the crowd with some kind of a problem, mentally, psychologically, whatever. But if I can play a couple of notes, or even leave a word, one note or one word that will take that person out of that stupor, then to me the job was done.
Serious, man. Serious.
And that's the value that I have for my music. It's not being religious either. I'm not into religion. I'm into spirituality.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You know, and I see myself as one with everything and everyone. I'm no different from the tree or the wind or none of that. I'm one with everybody. Even the madman you see on the street. Mental illness is just like any other illness. Anybody can get sick at any time.
Serious thing.
Right?
Man.
And my music is a healer. As long as the Holy Creator gives me this health and strength to do positive things with it, I will try to help who I can with it. You know, and hopefully I get paid in the process.
Well, you know, this little chat with you is very enlightening for me, and I know it's enlightening for the listening audience, Eugene. And well, one other thing I want to, because I want people to hear this now. As I was telling a friend, my apprentice, Misty and Roots. Can you tell us a little bit about Misty and Roots?
Love them to death. When I toured England first, Max Romeo was the guy who brought me to England first,
uh-huh.
And I met Misty for the first time. The lead singer with them, I can't remember her name now, but she was Max Romeo's sister.
Uh-huh.
And one of the other members, Rudo Moscow, was her husband. He was a member of the group too. They, to me, were one of the legendary great reggae bands in England. At the time, there were about 10 very good bands. You had Aswad, Steel Pulse. You had Matumbi.
Right.
Matumbi was on the tour with us with Max Romeo.
Wow.
You had Misty and Roots and quite a few other people. Another group was Reggae Regulars.
I got an album by them, man.
Okay, well, that was the band that I led for the tour with Max Romeo.
Oh, my God.
Yes. See, originally, I was supposed to go to England with my band from the States, but the record company was young and didn't have the budget for all the people that I had here. So,
uh-huh.
Being Max's musical director, they brought me up and said that will give me a band from London. So that's what happened, and that's how I met the Regulars. But Misty and Roots is an incredibly good band, and they have the most phenomenal live show.
Well, you know, all of their music is coming out now, and I know Clarence is still, I'm just trying to figure out, they haven't put a new album out, but they're still around.
They were slightly defunct.
I know, behind the, now, you know, some two brothers died now.
I didn't know that.
Yes, another one died, man. So,
gosh.
I would like to get in touch and try to find out what's going on with them, man, because, you know, and for me, England is one of the, you know, the best places where the music is coming from that I check for it, very much so, you know.
To me, England is pushing out great reggae for a long time, too.
Yes, sir.
Sometimes, yes, sir. I would say, you know, most of my Jamaican people might not like this, but even so much more innovative than Jamaica.
Well, that's because they travel and they get exposed to,
yes,
the different things, you know.
More eclecticism, yeah.
Yeah. You know, well, listen, Eugene, you know, I'm going to have to This is beautiful. I love it. And I still got that tape. I made the tape, Tales of Mozambique, and I'm going to send that to you. I got to send you a copy, and I got to send Larry a copy.
Beautiful. Before I came on, I heard a tail end of a song I hadn't listened to in years, something I did with Black Eagle.
Yeah, that's what it was. What the Prophet of Man.
Yes,
man.
The JTN vocals.
Yeah, man. Listen, if you hear where Carlos is, let me know, please.
I have a number for him someplace.
You do?
We'll communicate.
I'll talk to you later today.
All right.
All right, Eugene?
All right.
And let me put you on hold now, right now, so I can just put the music back on for the people. All right?
Okay.
Okay.